I cannot imagine the amount of stress and worry that's on these doctors and nurses, and obviously they have their own families and their own issues and people in their lives having health issues. But at the end of the day, you are in this profession, I assume, for a reason, and I hope that that reason is because you want to help people. So whatever that North Star is for you, I hope that you remind yourself of it often enough that when you step into a room with a new person, you can apply that guidance to that brand new patient that you haven't seen. I would say to move with empathy and know that as many patients as you may have, each one of them is going through something unique. Trust them. Trust that they know what they're feeling in their bodies, and do your best not to make assumptions.
Welcome to another episode of Advocates in Action, a podcast created by the Patient Advocate Foundation, a nonprofit that helps promote equitable access to affordable quality healthcare through providing case management services, financial assistance, and patient education and advocacy tools to people living with chronic, life-threatening, and debilitating illnesses. I'm your host, Ashley Freeman, Manager of Stakeholder Outreach and Engagement, and welcome to Season 9, where we get the opportunity to amplify several stories and contexts that illustrate health justice as a community-led movement for power building and transformational change. This season is brought to you in collaboration with Massey Comprehensive Cancer Center at Virginia Commonwealth University. Thank you so much for joining me on this season as we dive into health justice. And a huge part of health justice is advocacy. So I would love for you to start by sharing with us your journey in health advocacy.
Thank you for having me. My journey is ongoing. My first step kind of into this space was working with an organization called Fight Colorectal Cancer. That's based out of Washington, D.C., and they do a lot of work for policy change and government funding. It took me a little while to get comfortable with using my voice in this way. I think I was very sensitive to people's remembrance of my husband, of Chad, and I didn't want his legacy to be defined by the way that he died. And for a while, I felt that by me stepping out and speaking about it, then when people see me, they're going to think about him, and then they're going to think about cancer. And that's not the way that I want him to be remembered. And I had to kind of find a way mentally to create a separation between my own personal advocacy as a caregiver and as a person who lost a loved one to colorectal cancer, and separately how I carry his legacy in my own spirit and in my own work and in the things I do outside of advocacy. We know it is the second leading cancer for women. I believe it's also the second leading cancer for men, but it is expected to be the number one leading cause of cancer-related deaths for people ages 29 to 50 by the year 2030. So it's very, very, very soon. I also have worked with Dana-Farber Institute, was able to speak at one of their events. It was based around caregivers as advocates. I think it's hard for all of us to figure out what we wanna do, if we wanna do something, facing our own kind of triggers in these areas. So that was a really beautiful event to be a part of. And I've also worked some with Exact Sciences, who are the makers of Cologuard. They gathered about 200 healthcare professionals that are in the colorectal gastroenterology space to really brainstorm on the issues, meet people that they hadn't met, form alliances that needed to be formed. And so it was great to be a part of that.
And I know that colorectal cancer disproportionately impacts African Americans. So you talked about stats specifically for 2030. I know your advocacy is based on sharing with people what you wish you would have known. When Chadwick was diagnosed, you were 26, walking into caregiving and learning medical jargon. So what are some things that you could tell someone who's listening to this and maybe is recently diagnosed?
I would tell them to take things one day at a time it's a really tough rope to walk. You have to simultaneously have the faith that you will get through it, that, you know, that the treatments will work, that anything that you're doing supplemental will work, that God will work, you know, in your favor. But also knowing that, number one, God always works in our favor, even when that means we don't necessarily get the thing that we think it is that we need. You have to balance being able to accept information that the doctors give you while also knowing that you are trying everything that you can and researching separately. I would say get all of the second opinions. I think Stand Up to Cancer is a really valuable resource. They have a lot of tools for patient navigation, and that can be one of the most difficult parts. Something that I definitely feel like I learned throughout the process was not being afraid to ask more questions. I think that when we're sitting in front of a doctor and we don't know what their bedside manner really is like, some doctors can be very, very cold and very clinical and give you more information than you want to know. And other doctors can be almost too hopeful, almost so hopeful that it kind of becomes toxic, because then they keep information from you that you actually need to know. Your mindset is extremely important to your healing. And I understand the positivity for sure. They're using language that you have probably never heard before. And sometimes our egos can get in the way of wanting to appear as if we understand everything that's happening. And sometimes we do understand in that moment what they're saying, but then you have follow-up questions, and then you do research, and then you have other questions. So I think just having the freedom to bring those questions to your doctor, and also having the courage to bring those questions to your doctor, is super important. And learning all of those statistics is painfully not surprising, because it seems like Black folks are disproportionately more affected by a host of things. So it wasn't a surprise. And then when one starts to think about how all of these things are connected to each other, especially when they're all related to our health, it's incredibly frustrating. As members of our community have information, then it becomes our duty to share it and become advocates to our community, the Black community as a whole, as well as your community that's right around you. Your mom, your dad, your brothers, your cousins, your uncles, your friends, they're your responsibility, right? And if we can reach our small groups, then our degrees of separation can continue to reach out and reach out. That advocacy really has to start in your own home, in your own Rolodex, on your own Facebook friends. You really have to start there.
It starts within our own communities, right? You said our own Facebook groups, our own families, our own houses. However, we know that the onus isn't also always and forever on us, right? So when you think about the healthcare team and people who are listening to this who are providers and a part of the healthcare system, what are some tips that you would share with them when it comes to respecting and listening to your patients?
That you still have to maintain curiosity about your patients. Be curious, ask questions, take your time, you know, and really understand that you have someone's life in your hands. I cannot imagine the amount of stress and worry that's on these doctors and nurses. And obviously they have their own families and their own issues and people in their lives having health issues. But at the end of the day, you are in this profession, I assume, for a reason. And I hope that that reason is because you want to help people. So whatever that North Star is for you, I hope that you remind yourself of it often enough that when you step into a room with a new person, you can apply that guidance to that brand new patient that you haven't seen. And no matter how stressed out you might have been outside of that room, when you step into that room with that patient, you are with them. and not with somebody else that you saw an hour ago or somebody else that you saw 2 weeks ago. You're with this patient right then and right now. I think a lot of people in the medical field or otherwise tend to move in fear. And we're either moving in fear or we're moving in love, right? There's only those two things. As a doctor giving news to a patient, you're moving in fear, then you're not delivering them the news that they are hearing either in a loving way or lovingly giving them all the information they need to know. The doctors that I most appreciated were the ones that gave me the tough information because it allowed me and my partner to move with all of the factors. If we don't have all the factors, we find something out 3 months down the line, then it might be too late to react to it. I'm not saying any of this happened because fortunately we did have several doctors that were very forthcoming and doctors in particular that were just wonderful people that I am still very grateful for. I would say to move with empathy and know that as many patients as you may have, each one of them is going through something unique. Trust them. Trust that they know what they're feeling in their bodies and do your best not to make assumptions.
And you mentioned that some of your favorite providers were the ones who gave you tough information. So as a caregiver, supporting your husband, a loved one, for people who are listening to this who are caregivers themselves, what did that caregiving journey look like for you? Now that you're in a different season of your life, when you look back on it, what were some of the lessons and the things that you're carrying with you now?
Like you brought up a little while ago, I was 26. I was still very much getting to know myself. I think that above all, it taught me to rely on God for the strength that I did not have of my own volition. I realized how capable I am. Nobody can mess with me. I also recognized that I am an empathetic person and how important that is and how much I value that about myself.
And so many caregivers feel like, okay, I'm in this role, therefore this person's depending on me. Therefore, I have to be the strong one. I can't break down. I can't take care of myself. And so you, what would you share with the caregiver who is listening to this, who is in the thick of it? You know, what are some tips to find the words to be able to communicate what their needs are or to take a moment for themselves? What would you share with them?
I think that sometimes we just need reminders that our person that we're taking care of, something that I think is universally hard for that person is feeling burdensome. And they don't want to feel like a burden. And we don't want them to feel like a burden. You do have to be the strong one in most cases. It is important to allow them to show you that they can still be strong for you, even though they have this illness. They still want to support you, and they want you to know that you are appreciated. It can feel like I don't have any time. I can't go take a walk outside. I can't just go sit outside and have my coffee for 10 minutes. And you do have that time. You really have to be here now. And it's really, really important to take those moments when you have them. Another piece of advice I would give is to ask for specific help. Family members or friends, they still want to know, well, you know, do you need anything? Can I help you? I think so many times we brush that off and we say, no, I'm fine. No, it's okay, I got it. Oh, thank you, but no, I'm good, we're good, thank you. There's so much on your list that they could do. And for those people that are your circle, they need to know that they supported you in a time when you needed them too. You're also giving people that you love an opportunity to support you so that they can say, when they were going through this, I was there for my friend. Let them order you lunch or like, hey, can you send me a little Postmates gift card so I can order my own? Things that are very direct and very to the point if you're comfortable with them being in your house, can you just come over and like help me fold this laundry? That would be really, really helpful if you could do that. So that then you can dedicate more of your energy to your person. And I cannot say that I took any of this. I didn't come to this advice until I started talking to other people.
Yes, unfortunately, I can totally relate. I was a caregiver for my Nana, and there's so much information that I've learned now through working in this space and different circles that I'm in that I'm like, man, I wish I had this information back then. I would have done things so differently, right? But we have to honor the people that we were back then, right? She did the best she could with the information she had. And we just have to now take the new knowledge that we get and share it with others and help them so they don't fall into the same pitfalls or challenges that we experienced. And as you and Chadwick were going through this, what are some of those memories that you look back on now and, you know, it brings you joy? I remember I went to this event. It's called We Go On. It's an amazing event about grief, and it approaches it from the lens of having hope. And John O., one of the organizers, he says this beautiful analogy of like, when a person experiences grief, people feel like, if your life was a restaurant, now grief has a standing reservation at every table. And he's like, but that's not true. There's grief at some tables, but there's also joy. There's also beauty. All of these things can happen at once. You know, so when you look back on that season, what were some of those moments and memories of joy?
My husband was an incredible human being. He was incredible to people that had no idea who he actually was off of a movie screen or a TV screen or whatever. And he was even more incredible to those of us who knew him intimately. When you're faced with the possibility of losing someone you love, it does start to make you look at them more closely and appreciate them in a totally different way. It is no secret that someone who achieved what Chad achieved in his career is hardworking and talented and driven and ambitious and wise and all of these things, right? But what was incredible about being able to watch him is how he would give each person who had his attention a very specific part of him. It takes a lot of energy to engage and to engage intentionally with people, right? Because I can sit here and talk to you and I could be thinking about something totally different. I could be playing a game on my phone and being like, I never saw him do that. I never saw him engage with someone and not give them his attention. And it became more and more impressive to me because he was battling what he was battling physically. And so some of the joyous moments were watching him be able to still be himself and do his work and not allow anything to keep him from doing that. And the analogy that you just presented a second ago, it really hits me in my heart because it's saying in a different way what I've been trying to keep at the forefront as I go through my own grief, which is that love is in all of it. For any grievers that are listening, that is the thing to focus in on when it does feel like grief has a seat at every table. Because what is grief? Right? It feels a little bit cliche at this point. It's love with no place to go. So when you get caught in a moment that feels overwhelmingly sad only, remembering that it's not sadness bubbling forth, it's love bubbling forth. It's the intense love, the everlasting love that you have for this person. And that's the thing that has the seat at the table.
What would you tell people who not necessarily are grievers, but just anyone who wants to use their experience and be able to transfer that into action and into justice and movement and having impact in their community. Because I know when we began this conversation, you mentioned, I'm still getting comfortable in what those spaces look like for me. So what would you share with someone who might be at the beginning of that journey and is trying to figure out what those next steps looks like for them?
Take your time. There are a lot of avenues that one can go down when they start thinking about being an advocate for whatever cause. Most of the time, not the first person to experience whatever it is that we've experienced. Researching, really, and talking to others that are in whatever space you want to advocate in to see what's already being done, what has been done. It'll help you. It gives you an opportunity to kind of glance at the landscape of a space and say, okay, I feel connected to that. Let me go over there. And you also have others that'll help to guide you and inform you. It also helps you understand by hearing about other people's experiences, what is unique about your experience. Because every single experience with anything, you're the only one that's living your life.
Yeah.
Your person is different from their person. You're different from them. It's encouraging and it's validating to find similarities and find differences. And I think that'll really help to kind of figure out where you fit.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for you choosing where you wanted your advocacy to be in. I know in one of your previous interviews, you talked about how the symptoms of colorectal cancer or any GI issue can be easily overlooked because you could be like, oh, well, I just didn't drink enough water, or, oh, I ate dairy and I shouldn't have. And after hearing that, it made me think about some recent changes in my body over the past couple of months. And I was like, oh, it's because I'm in my mid-30s and like things are changing. And that was my mindset before hearing you share. And then after that, I was like, you know what? Actually, I'm going to go to the doctor and just have this checked out. You know, so thank you so much for using your voice and your experience with Chadwick and your caregiving journey to bring light to, hey, don't overlook these things that may seem little and they might actually be that, but just finding out and really guarding yourself with knowledge. So thank you for that.
Yeah, just to drop in on that. What's important to know about the symptoms of anything, right? Yeah. If something persists for more than 2 weeks, it's not because you didn't drink enough water and it's not because you just had dairy. If something is persistent, then you need to go and get that checked out, right? Mm-hmm. And I think in the healthcare system as it exists today, we have to advocate in that hospital room far more than we should have to. I gave advice to healthcare professionals in that space, but for the patients that are actually going into that room, we have to push for ourselves way more than we should be required to. We should be able to tell our doctor, hey, I've had these symptoms and I want to do this test, and we go and get that test. Unfortunately, that's not how it works. We know that our healthcare system is run based off of capitalism, and all they're concerned about is their bottom line. So if the test is expensive, our insurance is going to fight the doctor, and the doctor's going to have to fight them, and the doctor's got 250 patients, and so they're maybe not going to fight the insurance company for you, yeah. Right? So you have to fight so that they fight. If you have blood in your stool, you need a colonoscopy, period. The reason that a colonoscopy is different than any of the other stool-based or blood-based tests is that they can take care of it right then and there. Colorectal cancer is preventable and treatable. If you have the colonoscopy and you have polyps, they start off as polyps, they cut them out right then and there in that procedure. And now, if you had precancerous polyps, now they're gone. They're gone. So they don't have the opportunity to develop into cancer. And then they know that you need to come back and have another one next year or in 3 years or in 5 years. And now, where in 5 years you may have had cancer, You don't, yeah. Right? And you have to be insistent about that. The age, the recommended age for screening has been lowered to 45, which was a big deal, you know, for that to happen. However, there are 25-year-olds that are being diagnosed with stage 3 and stage 4 colorectal cancer. So if you have blood in your stool, if you have had persistent bowel issues for, again, more than 2 weeks, you need to push for that colonoscopy, because I've also found out that there are lots of healthcare professionals, lots of doctors that don't even know these statistics about younger people being diagnosed with later stage disease. So you have to be informed. Hopefully one day we will have a system where we have a doctor that is not overwhelmed by too many patients or is not controlled by insurance companies that can take care of us the way they're supposed to. Hopefully one day we'll have a lot of things, a lot of systems in place that take care of us the way that they're supposed to, but we don't right now. And we really have to be assertive and aggressive about putting our health first and taking it into our own hands. Insist on that colonoscopy. Have them put it in your chart that they refused to give you a colonoscopy when you asked for it. There are organizations like Fight CRC, like Stand Up to Cancer, that can help guide you and help you figure out how to have a conversation to get the kind of care that you need. There are resources if you don't have insurance. There are resources to help you pay for therapies. There are resources to help you pay for alternative tests.
Thank you so much for sharing those resources, because so many people receive a diagnosis, right? And sometimes it's their first personal experience with cancer, or it's their first time having to advocate for themselves on such a high level. So there can be such a big knowledge and awareness gap. So being able for them to have this information is so helpful. This whole season is about health justice. And I know some of Chadwick's last posts were about justice. They were about Jackie Robinson Day. They were about Black Lives Matter. The center of it was about justice. And it was obvious that he cared about people and their knowledge and their health and their understanding. In honor of him, as we close out, what do you feel like would be a call to action?
Talking about it is my call to action. There are resources. Once we have the information, then we have no excuse. So prior to listening to this podcast or having your own bout or yours or a loved one's with a cancer, you can claim ignorance. But once you have the information, you are truly the one that is responsible for pushing back. And I know that that is maybe a hard pill to swallow, because it shouldn't be just our responsibility. It really shouldn't be. I know that, I hear that, and I feel that. One of the things that is really universal in grief is feeling like, did I do enough? And you could have done everything right, and you'll still feel like, did I do enough? So when you have the opportunity to speak up and get the answers that you need, I really just encourage you to take that to heart. Use the resources that are available to you. Find community. There are lots of people who have been through these things before and are open and not even just willing, but excited to be able to share from their experience to help someone else so that they don't have the same experience that they did. For an example, the commitment that I have made is that no one in my life is going to die from colorectal cancer if I have anything to do with it. No one in my life will not have the information. No one in my circle is not going to know what kind of tests they can take, what they should be looking out for, everything that I've learned, what kind of tea you can drink, what kind of Eastern medicine is available. They're gonna know all the information that I have. And so if you have information, you are responsible for your community. It's scary to talk about health. I think in our community, there's a reaction sometimes to scary health news that is deny, 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 or this is just the way that God intended it. While I think faith is absolutely of utmost importance, we also have to respect that God put tools into our reach that we need to use. And those tools are people. It is hard to talk to our loved ones about sensitive subjects, particularly certain diseases that can get very, very personal. But I just urge you to push past the discomfort and have the conversations and make sure that those that you care most about are prioritizing their health, because you want to have them here.
I'm Ashley Freeman, and thanks for listening to this episode of Advocates in Action. If you haven't yet, please subscribe, review, and share this podcast. Your support is greatly appreciated. We enjoy connecting with our listeners, so please visit our website for show notes, resources, and ways to engage with us on social media. Thanks for listening.